Welcome to this week's episode of Stand Out, How to Grow Your Organizational and Productivity Practice, brought to you by NAPO, the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals. With every episode, we're going to learn from subject matter experts who can help you build your business in areas like marketing, HR, and finance. We'll also introduce you to business owners who are out there just like you are, and we'll learn from their successes and challenges. Please welcome your host, professional organizer, Sarah Karakayan.
Hello, everyone. This is Sarah Karakayan, and welcome to Stand Out, Growing Your Organizational and Productivity Practice. Today, we're going to talk about all things marketing, all that good stuff that really gets our business out there and helps us grow. And do I have the expert for you? The Wall Street Journal named him one of 10 bloggers every entrepreneur should read. And we all know there's a lot of noise out there when it comes to bloggers. So we have the best of the best. Drew McClelland has worked in marketing for over 30 years. His agency, McClelland Marketing Group, just celebrated its 22nd anniversary. And you know he's an awesome guy to work with and learn from because his agency was even recognized as one of the best places to work in Central Iowa. His clients come from all over the U.S., and their average client tenure is over 10 years. Drew's agency blog was launched in 2006 and has remained on the Ad Age Top 150 since inception. His first book, 99.3 Random Acts of Marketing, was published in 2003. He co-created the Age of Conversation series of crowdsourced books in 2007, and that series has raised over $50,000 for charity. Drew has been quoted and interviewed by Entrepreneur Magazine, The New York Times, CNN, Business Week, and he's contributed to Ad Age, The Washington Post, and Forbes, just to name a few. Above all this, Drew loves spending time with his daughter, and we are so very lucky to have him on today's show. So Drew, welcome.
Oh, thanks very much. I'm excited to be here.
Great. We are excited to have you because I know as organizers and as productivity specialists, you know, no matter where we are in the U.S., it's really important that we figure out a way to let people know we're here and how we can solve their problem. And I think marketing is the key to that. So,
unfortunately, build it and they will come model does not work for us as business people, right?
Right. Yep. You have to let them know that you're here.
Right.
So I really want to talk to you first. There are so many things that we could talk about, but you seem to really, you know, grasp the concept of blogging and make it work for you. So I want to talk to you about that because I know whenever I go to a conference or I talk to somebody, it's always that thing where, yeah, I started it and I stopped it and, you know, but I think consistency is key. So before we get into all that, how did you get into marketing? How did you get to be an entrepreneur? Did you always want to be an entrepreneur?
No. I went to college. My first major was psychology. It ended up being that I couldn't leave it at the office. So, you know, I wanted to bring everyone I worked with home and help them. And that's probably not a good career choice. So anyway, I decided to look at my talents and my interests. And obviously psychology was one of them. I'm a writer by sort of passion and trade. And, you know, people sort of fascinate me. So anyway, I quickly pivoted and ended up with a marketing BA and master's. And I've only worked in agencies my whole life. So when I was in college, one of my adjunct professors was the creative director at Gray in the Twin Cities and offered me a freelance job writing for them. And ever since then, I've worked in agencies. So I'd been in agency life about 10 years. I was just shy of 30. And was working for somebody that I didn't like the environment. I didn't like my boss. And so, you know, at the ripe old age of 30, I thought, well, how hard can it be to run your own agency? So I was sort of the perfect juxtaposition of ignorant and arrogant. And, so I launched the business and, very quickly realized that, boy, running your own business is a ton of hard work. And, so I had to learn two things. One, I was already pretty good at the advertising and marketing side of the business, but then I had to learn how to run a business, be a boss, you know, P&Ls and accounting things, you know, all the things I had avoided in college. So,
right.
So I had always assumed that I would probably run someone else's business someday. I mean, I'm sort of wired to be in charge, but it didn't really occur to me that I would be an entrepreneur until I was one and then had sort of the rude awakening of how hard it is.
So when did you know that your business was not just this, you know, exploration of a career of being an entrepreneur, and when it was going to be something that, you know, is going to carry you on through your career? When did you know that moment? What was that moment for you?
So, you know, it was funny, when I started the agency, my mom would come to visit, and I had a baby at the time. And she was about two, and my mom would like always be like, oh, well, the grocery store up in Minnesota had, you know, ham on sale or whatever. And it didn't dawn on me that she didn't think I was making enough money to, you know, feed my family.
Right.
So it was probably, I think it was after a couple of years, that it was sort of like, okay, I get that there are ups and downs to this, but I'm holding my head above water, and we're starting to really make some traction and make some money. And by then we had a couple employees, and it sort of felt like a grown-up business at that point, right? So we had office space, like many people, we started in a house, right, in a basement. Because, you know, to start an agency, you pretty much need a laptop and a cell phone, right?
Right.
So it was really by the time we were doing sort of the grown-up things, like we had the office and the employees. And as we were starting to grow reputation, you know, that, and we were starting to get calls out of the blue that people wanted to talk to us. We weren't chasing after the business all the time. So we were starting to generate enough buzz, and, you know, you would sort of hope we were good at marketing given what we do. So we were generating enough buzz for our own business that business started coming to us. And that was when I sort of went, okay, I'm not going to have to work for a job. But I will admit, I mean, you know, I've been doing this. I've been an entrepreneur now for, you know, 24 years. And there are still times like when I'm walking through Barnes & Noble and I think, oh, you know, if I needed a part-time job, this would be a cool place. And then I think, what are you talking about, right? So I think there's a little part of us, no matter how successful we are, no matter how long we've done it, that we worry whether or not it's sustainable. I think that's just human nature.
Right. So you still kind of have that, like, that plan B at the side of your head, even with all of your success now?
Well, it's not really a plan B, because I know it's a ludicrous thought. I mean,
sure.
But it's just sort of my subconscious reminding me maybe to not take it for granted.
Right.
And, you know, over the course of 20 some years, you know, my business, like all of your listeners' businesses, have gone up and down. We've been bigger and smaller. And, you know, knock on wood, we've been profitable every year, and we continue to grow in that way. But I just think, I don't know that there's anything wrong with it, with being grateful that it's going well and knowing that, you know, it's one phone call away from a crisis. And so you got to have a backup plan. My backup plan is really not working at Barnes & Noble, but, you know, there is just something human about that. That's like, oh, well, I could do that too. And it's like, you only get 4 hours of sleep. You don't have time for a part-time job. Right.
Yeah. Yes. So then, as a marketing agency, and marketing is so important, you know, even when you're not someone who studied marketing or worked in marketing,
right,
what for you and your business in the marketing world has been the best tool for your growth?
I think the best tool for any business's growth when it comes to marketing is, I think you have to have a very clear picture of who you are as a business, how you're different from everyone else out there who offers, because we all have competitors who do the same stuff, right?
Right.
So how am I different from the other people who do the stuff I do? And who do we serve best? So who's, we call it our sweet spot client. So who's our sweet spot client? Who are the people who, when they come to work with us, they stick around? So, you know, as you said in the intro, we're really lucky. We have some clients that have been with us 20 years.
Right.
So what is common about those people, and what is it about the connection that we have with them that makes them really value what we do and stick around? So the minute you know who you are and how you can talk about yourself differently, and the minute you know exactly who you should be talking to, there is no marketing channel or tactic that fixes that problem. If you're not talking about yourself in an authentic and accurate way, which is sometimes hard to do, it's difficult to see yourself when you're inside the bottle. It's hard to see the outside label accurately, right?
Right.
So once you've figured that out and you know exactly who those sweet spot clients are, so whether it's businesses or business owners or it's busy moms or whatever it is, now you can figure out, okay, where do they hang out? And where are they likely to hear my message? And you can sort of begin to see how you build the marketing plan from that point. But what often happens is people start with the channel. I need to be on social media. I need to be blogging. I need to buy billboards. I need whatever it is. Right. We start with the channel rather than we starting with ourselves and our best customers.
So we're starting to talk before we know who we're talking to.
Or what they care about. So that's the other thing, right? So when we talk, when we, you know, if I didn't know who your audience was and I was just, you know, on video talking, I could talk about anything. I could talk about Disney World or the Dodgers or whatever, because I don't know who I'm talking to. But because I know who the audience is and I know what matters to them, I'm going to really narrow the scope of my conversation so that every word that I say is as valuable as possible to them. So we should really be quiet until we figure that out. And then oftentimes our messages are better because they're aimed at the audience rather than us talking about ourselves.
Right, right. I was reading something on one of your blog posts that kind of stopped me in my tracks. And it says that we as businesses sometimes cast too wide of a net. We think wide. And you're saying, I think this is kind of what you're saying right now, is think more narrow and then get really, really deep so that we can really speak to those people who are going to keep coming back to us time and time again. How do we do that?
Yeah. So, it starts with recognizing that there are too many channels and too many people out there. And so one of the hardest things I think as a business owner is when there's a dollar on the table walking by the dollar, right? So we see all of these people out there that have money that we could, yeah, I could do that for them. Or, oh, we're sort of aligned in that. Or I can figure out how to do that. But the reality is that those dollars come at a high cost. So we've all had customers who were really not a great fit for our business. Either they were asking us for something that was a little out of our scope or our skill set, or they just weren't in alignment with us. You know, we don't listen to our gut often enough. There have been many times that I've been sitting with a prospect and my gut is going, oh no, 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 right? And now, 20 some years into the business, I'm pretty good at listening to myself. But in the beginning, the way I got good at it was by doing it wrong many times and taking clients that I just had this nagging feeling weren't going to really be a great fit. So I think the first thing you have to do is acknowledge and discipline yourself to recognize that chasing after everybody, so casting a super wide net, what that means is a lot of stuff is going to fly into the net or swim into the net that is really not suited for your business. What you really need to do is you really need to know exactly what, you know, staying with our net analogy, you need to know what fish you want to catch, and you need to be swimming around with a spear gun, swimming by all the other fish until you see, you know, the tuna, if tunas are your customers, and then you go after the tuna. And that takes great discipline. And I think it particularly takes great discipline when you're new in the business and you're scraping by for money. So at a certain point in time, any dollar is a good dollar. But what you learn quickly in your business is some dollars cost you more than others. And the trick to, I think, being a successful business owner is recognizing which dollars cost you the least in terms of having to rework process or learn new things, and which dollars are the most repeatable dollars. So which dollars are going to keep coming back? So what that means by nature is we're going to have to narrow our scope, and we're going to really have to choose which channels that, you know, I need to go only into the pond where tuna live, right? So if they're not in the pond next to me, let's call it Facebook. If they're not hanging out on Facebook, why would I waste 1 second on Facebook? And I think it's so easy to get lured into whatever the cool new thing is or what your competitor is doing. I mean, that's a super easy trap to fall into, as opposed to really being clear about who your audience is and just doing the things that matter to them. So one of the things that we counsel clients about all the time is, because they're like, well, we want to do outdoor boards and we want to have an event and we want to do podcasting and we want to whatever the thing is. And for us, it's really about narrow, narrow, narrow. I'd rather have you do 3 things and do them more often and do them well than do 10 things every once in a while.
Right.
So you got to pick up the channels that matter to your audience and then start there. And for most businesses, quite honestly, the channel you should pay attention to first is your own website, because nobody hires anyone today without checking them out on the web. I don't care if it's a pizza place or it's a, you know, a state attorney or anything in between. No one hires anyone without, you know, checking them out online. And so if your website makes you look homemade, makes you look like you still work out of your basement, makes you look like you're inexpensive, makes you look dated or old. Like if you haven't updated your website in 5 years, that's a problem. If your website isn't great on a cell phone, if it's not mobile responsive, what that tells me is you built your website 5 years or earlier and you don't care about the fact that 50% more or more of the searches that are going to find your site are going to be done on a mobile device. You've got to be mobile responsive. So the very first channel everybody needs to make sure is like top notch is their own website.
And that's probably where we should put a lot of our marketing dollars then, isn't if you can't do it, then hire someone who can make it look up to date and organized.
Yeah. And you know what? The great thing is with technology today, for most people, they don't need anything fancier than a WordPress website. And if you can run Microsoft Word, you can run the back of a WordPress website. So if you get someone to build it properly, and remind me, I'll send you a link to some folks that I think do a really great job at a really great price.
Great.
That'll build that out for you. And then they'll teach you how to do all of the updates and all of that stuff. So, you know, you don't have to keep paying them. If anybody tells you that you have to keep paying them to do web updates, that's crazy. Now, do you want them to manage it in terms of like updating the plugins and all of that? Yes, absolutely. So there's going to be a small maintenance fee, but anybody who tells you that you can't make the changes on your website, like adding a blog post or changing copy or whatever, that is not a website that you want.
What do you think about those websites? I don't remember the names off the top of my head because it's just this question just popped up. But those websites, you can kind of just plug everything in and then they go live.
Yeah, sites. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think of those? Or do you think it's better to have someone build it for you and then you maintain it rather than build it yourself and maintain it yourself?
So my first issue is that it's not just the technical skill, it's also the ability to lay it out in a way that you understand how web users, how their eye travels on a page and all of that. And odds are, if you, you know, if you're a listener to this podcast, that's not your skill set, right?
Right, right.
The other thing with that is that in most cases, then you don't have your own URL. You don't have mcclellanmarketing.com. You have WYSIWYGsite.com/McClellanMarketing. Right. One of the things that will absolutely tell your audience that you're not really serious about this, that you're not truly a professional, that you are not fill in the blank, all of the things they're going to worry about is one of them is that you don't have your own domain, as simple as that sounds. But in today's world, not owning a domain. So even if you use a Gmail address or a Yahoo, or if you're really old school, you know, AOL or one of those.
Right.
Right. But what that says is this is from the I'm not saying this is true, but what it says to the audience is this is kind of a hobby, or I'm sort of stepping into this, but I haven't really made the investment to look completely professional. Mm-hmm. So it's super important to grab a domain of your business name and to build the website so that when I Google you, your domain comes up, I click on it and I go to your website.
What other things are essential to letting our potential clients know that we are 100% serious about the business that we conduct besides a website?
Well, I think a lot of things on the website, right? So I think client testimonials are important. I think if you have any accreditations or you've earned certificates or I know this podcast is, you know, sponsored by the National Association. If you're a member of that, all of that says I take my profession seriously. Beyond that, quite honestly, it's simple things like having a decent logo. So I'm not saying you have to spend $10,000 on a logo. That's not what I'm saying. But you should not have like clip art for a logo. You should not do your own logo, right?
Right.
So even if you go to one of the crowdsourced website or crowdsourced logo design places, 50% of them will be awful, but the other 50% will be okay. Right. So, you know, you can get a decent logo for under $1,000. All the agency people, if they're listening to this now, are sending me
back.
But to start out, you may want to elevate it up later. You know, you need to, this sounds ridiculous, but you need to have business cards that are printed nicely. Don't print them off your computer. You know, so you just need to think about all the things that would give you red flags that maybe somebody's not so serious about this and make sure you're not making those really simple mistakes.
Those are all easy to
fix and not super expensive. And they're one-time expenses. And they really do indicate to the audience that this is your professional life. This is your business as opposed to a hobby or something you do on the side.
Right. Okay, so then let's get into, so you have the blog, you have a nice logo. What about this whole blog thing? We as organizers or productivity specialists, we often work either business to business or organizers will go into people's homes, and we're very hands-on. Do we need to be blogging or updating our website with articles monthly, quarterly? Talk to me about that.
Well, there's a couple reasons why you should think about those things. And by the way, blogging isn't the only choice. You could do a podcast. You could shoot video and do a little voiceover with it. And you know, back when I started my career, the average Joe couldn't do any of those things on their own. And now it's a lot easier to shoot video just on your camera even and do a little editing, and all of a sudden it's there. So here's the deal. So A, remember that the world revolves around the Google, right? So Google, the algorithm that Google uses to decide if you're on page 3, which you might as well not bother, or you're on page 1, which is where we all want to be. The main way that Google decides that is it's got this really complicated algorithm. And one of the things that's important in the algorithm is that the website changes on a regular basis. So they have these things called spiders that literally go out and crawl the entire web. So they're crawling all of our websites. And one of the things they're noticing or they're taking note of is, has the website changed since I've been here last? So if you're not updating your website, you know, once a week, once every other week, something like that, Google begins to decide that your content is stale. And that drops your ratings on the Google. Second thing it does is, especially one of the reasons why blogging is so popular is because it's words. And what Google can track is words. So if, for example, you do organizing for the busy family and you keep using that phrase over and over in blog posts and things like that, all of a sudden, if somebody Googles organizing tips for busy family, Google matches those things up and says, oh, this is a website that has a lot of relevant content to that. So one of the things you need to do, and again, this is about chasing the tuna and not all the fish, is you need to create a list of words or phrases that you think someone would be searching and what they would hope is to find someone like you. So again, depending on what you do and who you do it for. So we're all the way back to see how critical this is, right? Now you're going to have what I would call 10 to 20 phrases. So it's probably not single words like organizing or productivity, because those are too broad and you'll never score well there. But again, that phrase, like I used, you know, organizing tips for busy families or whatever it may be, or, you know, getting your small business organized, whatever. And by the way, the fact that you typically work in a local environment also helps you, right? So, but anyway, so now you're going to have this list of key phrases. And so now what you want to do is you want to weave those phrases, not in a way that it's called keyword stuffing, not in a way that I can't read it and understand it because you're shoving the keywords in, but in a natural way of writing. You want to use those phrases as often as it makes sense so that it shows up when the spiders come by, right? And so now all of a sudden when someone searches for those key phrases, then odds are you're going to show up, you know, on an earlier page than you would have otherwise. So if you're going to do video, for example, what you want to do, because Google can't spider a video, you're going to want to include a transcript of the video underneath the video so that Google has something to search and to be able to attach meaning to that video. Mm-hmm. So it's the beauty of blogging is that, you know, it's easy to tell stories. It's easy, you know, in your world, I would guess that you can do a lot of great things with photographs and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even showing a photograph and doing a before and after, and then some commentary around that. It doesn't have to be super long. It doesn't have to be super intellectual. It just needs to be something that makes me understand who you are and what you are. But more importantly, quite honestly, it is breadcrumbs that you are laying out so Google brings the right people to your website.
How do we know that our posts are ranking high? Do you just Google those keywords you said, like organizing for a busy family, and see if your post is on the first page? Or is there another way that, I don't know?
There are tools out there. So, you know, hopefully what you're doing is hopefully everyone has Google Analytics attached to their website. And if you go into Google Analytics, it'll show you what people are searching for and how they're finding you. So you'll be able to see, In Google Analytics, you can see a million things. You can spend all day in there, which I don't recommend. But I mean, you can see how many people are searching on desktops versus mobile devices. That'll even tell you if it's an iPhone or an Android. But one of the more helpful things than that is, how are they getting to you? So are they clicking? It'll show you the inbound link. So for example, if you've been quoted in something else or on someone else's website, or you've participated in a discussion in a forum or whatever, it'll show you that somebody clicked on a comment you made in Facebook and that brought you to the website. So, you know, again, participating out in other places is super important too. Again, go to the pond where the tuna are hanging out. And it may not be your website, but you want to drive them back to your website. So there's tools that will tell you that, but quite honestly, it's going to take a while. So this is not write an article on Monday and all of a sudden you show up on page one Tuesday. This is
okay.
You know, this is months and months of marketing is not a quick fix. So if anybody's trying to sell you anything, radio spots or, you know, an ad in the high school program or whatever they're trying to sell you, if they tell you that you're going to get instant results, they're lying. So marketing is drip by drip by drip. So think of it as planting a bunch of seeds. So when we talk to clients, we talk about you basically are the Johnny Appleseed for your business and you are just out throwing apple seeds, right? So you're participating in forums, you're on Facebook, you're putting stuff on Pinterest, you got stuff on your own website, you're going to networking events, you belong to a professional networking group where you get together and give each other leads. Whatever you're doing, those are all seeds and you're just scattering them out on the land and you have no idea what combination of seeds is going to lead someone to you. And so, again, this is why it's really tempting to do everything because you think, oh, well, I could scatter more seeds. And what I'm saying to you is stay in your plot of land, right? But scatter more seeds in the plot of land. Odds are better that something is going to take root the more seeds you put in this area. But do not think of the countryside as your audience possibility. Think of like a, you know, 1 acre plot of land. One of the things that I think a lot of people don't sort of do the math around is I think a lot of times people think they need more customers than they do. Yeah. When you think about it, for most small businesses, we can only onboard X number of clients a day, a week, a month before we're overloaded, especially if you don't have employees, right? If it's just you.
Right.
Even if you have a handful of employees, you can only take on so many new clients. So you don't have to be, you don't have to spend 5 hours a day doing marketing stuff because honestly, if it all worked, if all those seeds took root, you'd be hosed because now all of a sudden you have all these people that want your business and you can't make them happy because you're stretched too thin. So right. Marketing is one of those things you just keep planting seeds and you just know that people are in different sort of spots in the pipeline. So from the, I don't know you from Adam at the top of the sales pipeline to the, boy, I think you're interesting and I'm starting to follow you because you're giving me some great, you know, DIY tips around how to get my business or, you know, home organized or how I could be more productive. But you know what? There are some of these bigger issues that you're talking about that I don't want to do myself. So that's a common misperception. People always go, I don't want to give away all my thinking.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You actually do. You really do. You want to make, I just had a discussion with somebody on Twitter about this morning. You want to be as helpful as you can be. And you want to set them up to do whatever they can on their own. Because what you're doing is you're demonstrating, A, how smart you are, B, you're being helpful. So now they sort of feel like they owe you and they're going to stay connected with you. Because remember, today's marketing is all permission-based. If I don't want you to email me, I unsubscribe. If I don't want to follow your Facebook page, I just, you know, I just unlike you. So right. I've got, as the audience, you've got to keep being interesting and valuable to me for me to stay in tune with you. Sooner or later, I'm going to get to a point, some subset of those people. Some people are going to just take your free advice and do it all themselves. That's fine. Because you know what? They have a friend who's too busy to do it themselves.
Right.
And they're going to go, oh my gosh, you need to call this woman that I've been following, Sarah. She does this stuff. Right. Or sooner or later, they're going to have a job that is too big or outside of their skill set or their comfort zone. And who are they going to call? They're going to call the person who's already been helpful to them. Right. So that's one of the reasons why we blog the way we do. We give away so much marketing ideas and tips. And I'm basically saying to you, here's exactly what you need to do, right?
Right.
You know, look at the podcast. I'm not holding anything back. I'm telling you exactly what to do. And hopefully people will go and do it on their own, or they'll find people, but some subset in my world, in my acre, some subset of people who read the blog or follow me on Twitter or whatever, however they find us and get attached to us, is going to go, you know what? We actually need an agency. Well, of course I know who I'm going to call. I'm going to call this guy because I've been following him for 3 years and I get his e-newsletter and I've been putting his tips into practice. So I've already decided he knows what he's talking about, right?
Right.
So remember that to buy something, people, we have the know, like, trust model. So they have to know who we are, they have to like us, and they have to trust us. Before anyone, from a tube of toothpaste to a car, that's the buying cycle. Well, when I am helpful to you and you sort of get a sense of who I am and what I'm about, now you know who I am. And you either like me or don't. And by the way, it's okay for them not to like us because they would be bad customers anyway. So you kind of want some group of them to not like you and move on. And after you've been helpful a bunch of times and consistently, now they begin to trust our advice and the fact that we're always going to be there. The fact that we answer email when they send us a question. All of that moves them along the know, like, trust model. When they're ready to buy, they're so much further along the cycle with us that no one else has a shot.
Right. It's interesting on two levels. So especially with my fellow organizing colleagues, I know we talk about it all the time, like getting on to in front of the camera or on your blog and laying out the exact process of decluttering. And a lot of us have our own ways of doing it. And I think that's, like you said, what makes each of us special in our own markets is the, how you do it. You'll track that kind of person. But, and you know, I've thought it, I love helping people. That's why we're in this, but you also want to make money doing it. But you were saying, get on the blog post and give a step-by-step on how to, you know, tackle that closet or how to organize your office for ultimate productivity, like lay it all out there. And yeah, I think you're right because when you...
It's so counterintuitive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're right though, but before I hire anybody, even, you know, We were looking for someone to mow one of our lawns, and I think I spent 30-45 minutes looking up different businesses and then looking at reviews and then seeing if they had a blog or seeing if they were active on, you know, any social media platform, because if they weren't, or they haven't posted in the past 6 months, you know, are you still live? Are you there?
Right.
So
one, you know, you just mentioned another thing we really have to be conscious of is the ratings and reviews. So one of the other big factors for Google is if you have ratings and reviews on Google, that is going to increase your the algorithm's likelihood to serve you up on a main page. So you should actively be asking people to review you on Google. Send them the link that lets them review you on Google, because most of your colleagues, or most of your competitors rather, aren't going to do that because we're all afraid of the bad review. And we can talk about that in a second, but it's super important that you have reviews today. That, in fact, I just read a statistic that most people will not hire someone if they have no reviews, and they only read 3 or 4 before they decide. And if you have anything below like a 4,
forget about it.
Forget about it. Right?
Yeah.
So think about it. If we don't ask for reviews, who's likely to review us? People who are mad, right? Because it takes effort to like find out where to go and, you know, air all your grievances. When we're fine with someone, when they've done a good job, or even if we love them, we're not as inclined, unfortunately, to leave a review. So when we don't ask for reviews, either we're going to have none or we're going to have mostly bad reviews. But when you ask someone, and this is, there's an art to this, knowing like, so for example, if you had come to my house, you have to kind of you have to get sort of the psychology of, when is Drew going to be so over the moon about the fact that his closet is organized for the first time in 10 years? Like, at what stage is that sort of like, when does the new car smell go away, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, after like a week of my life being so much easier and more convenient because everything's where it belongs, that's when you send me the email and you say, hey, Drew, it was really great working with you. Would you mind leaving us a review on Google? Here's a link. Here's a sample of how, you know, it doesn't have to be super long, even just a couple sentences of how life is different after we've worked together, what you really enjoyed about the process. If there's something that you didn't enjoy or wasn't to your satisfaction, I'd really love it if you would chat with me about it. But whatever your opinion of us is, I would really appreciate a candid review. That's a great way to build up your reviews. And quite honestly, again, since most of your competitors probably have none, even having four or five is a huge leg up.
Okay, I have more questions about reviews, but we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll go back to the review things. I have a couple other questions about how we can really leverage those reviews, because I feel like there's ways that we can make that, you know, all over any our website or our social media channels, but we'll be right back.
The Acceleration Learning Series offered by the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals includes Ask the Organizer panels, business building block sessions, and connecting with corporate partner presentations. These one-hour conference calls are only available to NAPO members. Visit napo.net to learn more about membership and our Acceleration Learning Series.
All right, coming back from our break, we were just talking about the importance of reviews and that they need to be on Google. So I want to talk about that real quick. So what about Facebook? I know a lot of us have a Facebook business page. It's like you kind of just regurgitate some of the things that you have on your website and you put it on Facebook just so you're active. Do we want reviews on there? Or you're saying just make sure you've got reviews on Google and then you're set?
You know, the reality is you probably want them everywhere, right? So you might want them on Yelp. You might want them on Facebook.
Right,
but
Yelp,
the one that really matters the most in terms of findability is Google. So the beauty of Facebook is if somebody's following, I'm not going to see your review if I'm not following your page, right? Mm-hmm. But if somebody's already found you and they're sort of checking you out, now all of a sudden the Facebook reviews matter. So unfortunately, it's not a one and done thing. I mean, one of the frustrating things about marketing today is the channels have gotten so fragmented. There's so many. You know, when I started in the business, it was pretty easy. It was television and radio and print. So it was newspaper and magazine. And, you know, we would do events and things like that. There was outdoor. But, you know, I hate to say this, but, you know, back when I started, there was no internet or it was just in its infancy. And so we didn't have all of this stuff. So I get that it's more complicated and more confusing. But in this case, around rating and reviews, Google matters the most. And I would say if you're active on Facebook, and some people may not be, that matters there. If you are more B2B, if you serve more businesses than you do residential clients, then probably LinkedIn makes sense. And so there you would not get a rating and review. You would basically get recommendations. So you have to, again, it all goes back to knowing your audience, right? And knowing where they're going to go to look for credible reviews. One of the things I find fascinating is, you know, we all have lived by ratings and reviews our whole lives. You know, when your neighbor says, oh, we just saw this movie and it was awesome, we all of a sudden go, oh, maybe I should see the movie, or, you know, a new restaurant in town or anything like that. I mean, that's how it's been since the dawn of time.
The
difference is now we are perfectly willing to take strangers' opinions as gospel.
Right.
And so, you know, they've done studies and they've asked people if they give more credibility if they know the person giving the review. And believe it or not, the answer is no. That I will believe what I see on Amazon or on Google from strangers just as much as I would believe what my next door neighbor tells me about a restaurant. So again, it's critical that we have them. And it's critical that we understand how important they are to our business.
Yeah. And I think, too, here's a weird question, too. As a business owner, especially if your name is in the business, you know, whether it's Organizing with Sarah or what have you, can we leave reviews of vendors that we work with, or even if it's not related to your business at all, if there's something negative we want to say or share about something that we feel passionate about, especially if it's a vendor, someone we've worked with who really dropped the ball. As a business owner, though, can you leave honest reviews in that world?
Yeah, that's a double-edged sword, isn't it? So the best way to get reviews is to leave reviews.
Okay.
So let's start on the positive side first. So if you have vendors that are awesome, I would be actively leaving them reviews on Google. Ah. And then when they say something to you, say, you know what? I know how important that is for search. So if you had a good experience with us, I would love a review as well. Nothing wrong with saying that. Most of the people, when you get a review on LinkedIn, pretty soon, 3 days later, or when you leave a review, pretty soon, 3 days later, they've left you one. So there's just something sort of human nature, like you did something for me, so I have to do something for you back. So A, that's a great way to get reviews. Number two, to your question about negative reviews, mm-hmm. I think, first of all, I don't think there's anything wrong with being honest. I think you have to decide what that relationship is worth. So think of it from the other way around. So if one of your vendors was about, because you showed up late three times, or you took too long to pay them, or whatever it is, how would you want them to handle that? So if I had a vendor, so let's say a printer that we work with, and mm-hmm. we'd do something right by them, I would want them to call me and say, you know what, Drew, we did not have a good experience. Here's what happened. Let's work it out. So I would first go there, right? So yeah. I think business owner to business owner, over the years, I certainly have had calls where people have said, hey, Drew, you know what? I own a business. I would want to know this. Here's what happened with your employee, or here's what happened when we ran this ad, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
And I always valued the fact that A, they had the courage and the honesty to be square with me, and B, that they did it in sort of a private way, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't get any resolution around that, then you have to decide, am I leaving a review because it matters to my professional reputation, or because I don't want other people to get bamboozled by this person. So there's, with every choice, there's a consequence, right? So again, if you leave me a bad review, just like if you leave me a good review, I'm likely to leave you a good review.
Right.
If you leave me a bad review, you got to know that odds are it may come right back, right?
Right.
To bite you. Mm-hmm. So I'm not so sure, unless it was so egregious that you just sort of feel like you have to warn the world.
Right.
I'm not so sure I would do it. What I would do is I would just decline to leave a review. And if somebody asked me to leave a review and it was like, I would not leave you a good review, that's when I would pick up the phone or I would shoot them an email and say, you know what, we should talk about this, because quite honestly, I've avoided leaving you a review because I don't think it would be favorable. And I don't want to do that to you publicly.
Yeah. But I think that's a great idea though, just being active, mm-hmm. reviewing other vendors positively.
Yeah.
Because A, they did a great job. I know when you find someone who's great to work with, you want to keep them close.
Right.
And like you said, if I scratch your back, you'll scratch mine probably. So that's a great tip.
Yep.
That's a great tip. I would like to go back to blogging real quick, because I know with a lot of my colleagues and at NAPO meetings, we often talk about how do we come up with content consistently?
Yeah.
What's a good way to do that?
So I, not only do I blog for our website still, so I'm still the one writing all that, but I also write a weekly marketing column that I've written for over a decade. And I remember when the newspaper asked me to do that, they said, you know, do you think you can do this for a year? And I was like, yeah, I can probably come up with, you know, 52 things. So now we're past the decade mark. So honestly, the way I do it is I listen to the questions that our clients ask us, because mm-hmm. I figure if one person asks, another person cares about it. So I'm constantly listening, and I keep a list of a running list on a digital organizer that I use. I keep a running list of topics, the things that have come up. I also am a pretty prolific reader. So I'm out there listening and watching and reading. And when I start to see something coming up over and over and over again, I think, okay, this is probably something our clients or our prospects are starting to worry about or think about. So I should probably explain this to them. So quite honestly, for me, it's never about what we're trying to sell or what we're trying to do with clients. It's really about what is my tuna worried about? Mm-hmm. And how do I relieve that worry? How do I help my prospect, my sweet spot customers? How do I help them solve this problem that I know is sort of bothering them because some of our clients have asked, or I'm seeing it in social media or whatever it is. So that's what defines it for me.
So let's say I'm an organizer and I specialize in residential organizing.
Yep.
I've been blogging now and I've committed to blogging once a week. And I feel like all of a sudden there's a lot of talk on, organizing, you know, the corporate office space or there's a new app out there that helps you stay organized. Can I get outside of my niche of residential organizing and talk about that? Or do I still want to be narrow and deep and just keep going into that residential? Like, can things in my blog maybe be outside of what I usually specialize in?
Yeah, but I think you have to tell the tuna why they would care about that, right?
Okay.
So here's this really interesting new sort of trend in corporate productivity. And what I find fascinating about this is how it really can apply to your family as well. Right. So you have to connect the dots for them. You have to help them understand it. Every once in a while, one of the things that I like about blogging is that the readers get a sense of sort of who you are as a human being. And so every once in a while, it's okay to get personal or to go down a path that is not sort of the core of your messaging. But 9 out of 10 of your blog posts should be right dead on in what the tuna cares about.
Gotcha. Can we ask the tuna what they want to hear? Do you think it's a good idea to send out surveys or questionnaires or things like that to kind of get more content ideas?
Sure. And one of the other things is if you get an email or a question, one of the things that I do a lot of times is I'll write, got an email from, you know, Bill M. And here's what he asked. And here's what I said back to him. So A, now I don't have to write the content twice because I really did answer Bill about his question, right? And two, what I'm saying to my audience is if you ask questions, I'll answer them. And now I'm encouraging more questions, which A, are probably prospects for my business, but B, now my email back to them is pretty much my blog post, right?
Right.
So one of the things about especially social media and creating content is it's super important to have a plan for what we call slicing and dicing. So for example, when we produce a podcast for a client, we will slice and dice that podcast into about 25 to 28 pieces. So tweets, Facebook posts, Instagram posts, videos, your blog posts. So you need to have a plan so that if you create a blog post, then what are the 5 other things you do to it? Do you share it on Facebook? Do you tweet it out? Do you take do you take the visual of it and make it a little graphic and put it on Instagram? Again, depends on what ponds you're fishing in. Mm-hmm. But you should have a plan. And you should do the same thing with everyone, right? So you don't have to keep reinventing the wheel. Have like a post-it note that says, you know, every time I write a blog post, these 5 things happen. Some of them you can automate. There's lots of tools out there that once something gets posted on your blog, it can automatically be sent out to, you know, all the social networks. So in some cases, you don't have to manually do it, but you should have a plan of how you're going to slice and dice the content. So it's not just a one and done, but instead every blog post becomes 5 or 6 touch points. Because the other thing too is just because you blog doesn't mean everybody's checking out your website every day to see if you've added a new blog.
So right.
If they haven't subscribed, you're going to have to send out that blog post to the world to tell them that it's there. So whatever social channels you're active in, that's where you want to start sharing that. And then hopefully other people will like the content and they'll start to share it too.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So with sharing the blog post, or like you said, it doesn't have to be blog post.
It could be video or a podcast. Yep.
Sure. And repurposing it, like you said, make a plan, whether it's share it on LinkedIn or, yep, or Instagram or whatever. When we share it in those different channels, so you said, you know, 5 or 6 times to them, to me, I'm thinking, okay, so that's a whole week that I'm kind of sharing the blog post. Is that enough to remain active on those social media channels? Or should I also, in addition to sharing whatever blog post I've just created, should I be on there commenting and being more active on there too? I guess I'm asking, how much time a week should we be dedicating to marketing in real time?
Yeah. So first of all, if the only thing you share is stuff about you, it's sort of like going to a cocktail party. You know, we've all met those people who after about 10 minutes of talking about themselves, they go, enough about me. Tell me, what do you think about me? Right. And you're right. Like, I have to go to the bathroom or do something, right? I got to get away from you. So I think you have to be really careful that you're not patting yourself on the back and you're not talking about yourself all the time.
Okay.
I think one of the ways to do that is to curate other content. So for example, you know, in my business, there are other people who write really great content and who share great tips. And in some cases, there are competitors. So we share their content too, and then we'll make a comment on it. We'll say, well, this is really interesting because of this trend or because of that. So, and again, some of that can be automated. Some of it, you know, there's a great tool called Deliverit where you can pre-program certain content. So it could be a podcast, could be a blog or whatever. And basically what you say is every time, I'll give you an example. Every time Drew writes a new blog post, share it on Twitter, right? So you can automate all of that.
Wow.
So the danger of that, of course, is if all of a sudden Drew goes off the rails and starts writing political stuff. So you want to watch people's content for a while to make sure that they sort of stay on point and that they're not, you know, going off onto a deep end in some other direction. But once you have confidence in their content, there's nothing wrong with doing that either, right? So,
right.
And you can do that on your Facebook page. You can do it on your LinkedIn. You can do it on lots of channels. And Deliverate's not the only tool. Social Oomph is another one. But the other thing is, so let's say you've written a blog post, and so you've sliced and diced it, and you've shared the five things. Mm-hmm. Well, next week, you're going to write another blog post, right?
Right.
Well, one of the things you want to do, and Social Oomph is a great tool for this, by the way. So let's say I've written a blog post about the color blue, right? And why that's a great color on walls, which I'm looking at my own wall and thinking, I hope that's true. right? So I've written that blog and I wrote that last week. Well, now I can put it into Social Oomph and I can say, you know what? I want you to share this back out to my channel every 8 weeks. So imagine after you've blogged or whatever you've done, you've created content for a year. Now Social Oomph is sharing that out. So now I'm putting out, because you know what? If I didn't see your blog post about how beautiful blue walls are today, and maybe I don't discover you or your website for another 6 months, odds of me digging down,
right,
finding the blue wall post are probably nil to none. But mm-hmm. that doesn't mean it wouldn't be interesting to me. So unless your blog or your content, we keep saying blog, but it doesn't have to be that.
Sure.
Unless your content is time sensitive, like a Christmas thing, right? I don't want to read about your Christmas thing in June. But if it's something that is sort of evergreen in terms of its value or usefulness to me, there's no reason not to recycle that so that not every day. And so again, after 3 or 4 months, though, you would have 3 or 4 things going out every day on some channels. You also want to be careful that you don't overload your channel with like, oh my God, every time I turn around, they're tweeting, right?
Right.
So you have to manage that. But, you know, imagine if you did that and you just said every quarter, share this out, right?
Right.
So now all of a sudden you've got 2 or 3 things going out on your channels every day within a year. And as long as that content stays evergreen, you could do it, you know, for multiple years.
So I'm thinking too, so going back to the example of your residential organizer, so what else would your client really care about? Maybe it's right. keeping their home clean, or whether it's the newest design trend for residential homes, you're right. saying find those other content creators right. and take those things that align with what you do and make it even better and bigger and more interesting.
Right.
And now you've made alliances with
right.
those.
Right. Here's what happens, right? So if somebody, I don't care how big a social presence you have, you mm-hmm. check to see who shares your stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So if somebody starts sharing a lot of your stuff, what's the human nature thing? Well, I'm going to go check out their stuff, right?
Right.
And again, you sort of feel, just like the reviews, you sort of feel an obligation. Well, he keeps sharing about my podcast, so I should share about his podcast. And guess right. what? Now, if you're sharing their stuff, all of a sudden they're going to be checking you out. And if you've got good content, they're going to be sharing it with their audience. And guess what? Odds are, if you've done a good job in picking them, their audience is your audience. So now they're sharing it with people that know about them but don't know about you. Oh, and by the way, if Drew shared it, and I already know, like, and trust him, and he tells me that Sarah is smart, well, you know what? I just assign that know, like, and trust to Sarah, and now I think she's smart too. Because if Drew thinks she's smart, and I think he's smart, okay, I get it. So
right.
we, again, a lot of what we're talking about is sort of counterintuitive. Like, well, why would I want to share someone else's content? Why would I? It all comes from having confidence in your own ability and not having a scarcity mindset, but having an abundance mindset.
Yeah.
And if you believe there's plenty of clients out there for everybody, and you really do want to be helpful, and you want to be helpful in bigger, broader ways than just the work that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Now it gets a whole lot easier because now there's this mutual reciprocity thing happening with ratings and reviews and sharing. And all of a sudden now you're amplifying your message without having to do all the manual labor of amplifying your message.
Right. Sounds like collaborating is a really great tool.
Right.
for these small business owners, even if it's someone who maybe is in line with what you do.
Right.
Like you said, there's plenty of work to go around. So don't be afraid to join forces and, yeah, and have an even bigger voice.
Well, and for a lot of your listeners, they have a geographic sort of boundary in which they're going to work, right? So if I live in, you know, Cleveland, Ohio, odds are I'm not going to take a client in San Diego, right? So I think one of the other things you can do is align with other people who actually do what you do for the same audience, but in a different market, and create an alliance and say, hey, look, I blog every Tuesday, you blog every Thursday. What if we shared each other's content to our audiences, right?
Right.
And it matters that the content is good. It matters that they're in alignment with how you think and approach your profession. But I have to think that you all know other people who are like you, but they just work somewhere else.
Right.
And so there's no reason why you can't. And now you look generous and now you look plugged into the industry and the trends, because you're not only sharing your own stuff, but oh my gosh, you're connected to organizers or productivity professionals over there and over there and over here. And wow, look at how you're curating that content for me. It just makes you look bigger and smarter.
Wow. That's a great tip. Cause I think we can all get so scared sometimes, especially when we're entrepreneurs and we right. often start on our own. You get very protective over
yep.
create and who you share it with. But, you know, I think it just goes back to being a great person.
Yeah.
Makes yes. you have a great business owner as well. So the more you share and the more kind you are and the more compliments you give that are genuine, sounds yep. like it all come back to you as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. It really is. It is about knowing who you serve and serving them in the ways that are best for them. And it really does come back to you.
It's great. So if we were to leave our audience with two, I'm going to call them sticky notes, because I know us, we like to put labels on lots of things and, right. and stay focused. What are two sticky note, big impact, next step items you believe our organizing and productivity professionals can implement, if not immediately, in the next few weeks to make a big change in their business?
So sticky note number one would be literally write down, describe for me your ideal customer. And so literally, if I walked into a room of 100 people, if I've read your description, I would be able to pick them out of the 100. Let's say there's two of them hiding amongst the 100. You've described them in such detail. So it's going to be a couple pages of you really thinking about who they are. Describe them. And then, so this is still sticky note number one. So it's sort of a two-parter. So describe them in writing so that I could find them in the cocktail party. And number two, every time you start to write something, ask your, and name them, by the way. So if your sticky person is a small business owner, let's call him, you know, Sam, the small business owner.
Okay.
Every time you write content, you need to ask yourself, would Sam care about this? And if the answer is no, do not bother writing it or sharing it.
Yeah.
Okay. So sticky note number one.
Okay.
Sticky note number two is look at all of the ways that you do marketing. And anything that you're not doing at least once a week, other than probably a monthly newsletter, which some people will do, ask yourself, am I doing this enough to be impactful? And if the answer is no, I would rather have you blog twice a week than do something else every 2 weeks, right? So I want you to narrow the number of ponds that you're swimming in. And again, make sure that Bob's in the pond, right? And that you are doing fewer things, but doing them more often and with a higher quality. So don't just slam stuff together. Give it some thought. Make it be something that's uniquely you, right?
Right.
And I think that's a great way to kick off, you know, the new year and sort of new focus on marketing.
Those are great tips. And I feel like we hear these things, but like you said, it's a new year. So let's finally do them.
Right.
And put them into practice.
If we all did everything we knew that was good for us, you know, we would all get 8 hours of sleep and we'd all be
right.
thin and healthy and take all our vacation time and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, but if you do just those two things, and again, remember that it's not going to change things overnight.
Right.
This is a long-term play. But right. I promise you, it will change the tenor of your business.
Those are great tips. I think those are great tips no matter how long you've been in business. Your business will ebb and flow and you'll change who your ideal client is. And so it's kind of good to revisit that.
Yep. And most of you, by the way, will have two or three ideal clients. So it's like, okay, well, I've got Bob and I have Mary and I have Joe. If you have more than three, then you're trying to serve the whole world. But many of you will have two or three. So don't, if you start to describe Bob and you go, oh, well, wait, but I do 30% of my business with Betty's. Okay, great. Describe Betty too. But, you know, no more than three.
Gotcha. Great. Okay. That's a great tip. Okay, Drew, where can our listeners find out more about you and keep up with all your great marketing tips?
So the easiest way is just to go to mclellanmarketing.com. So it's M-C-L-E-L-L-A-N marketing.com and click on the blog tab and we're right there. And you know, I'm everywhere on social. So you can find me on LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter. Those are the three main places that we spend time. And we try and share a lot of content there that hopefully is useful to folks.
Great. Yeah, I know I've read your blog and every single post I can implement something into my own business. So it really is a really great blog for our entrepreneurs to read and to keep
Thanks.
Up with. Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much for taking your time to be with us today, Drew. We really, really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
That's all for this episode of Stand Out, brought to you by the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals. Be sure to visit napo.net to learn more about our educational offerings, our local chapters, and both certification and certificate opportunities. Don't miss an episode as we help you build the business you've always dreamed of owning.